be talking about results from the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance System among injection drug users. NHBS is a multi-site, large, ongoing research study of HIV risk groups located in 25 cities around the country with high HIV and AIDS prevalence. And this talk is just going to be looking at the cycle that we conducted among injection drug users and just in New York City. The issue that I'm going to be talking about really is ongoing syringe sharing in a context of decreasing HIV and AIDS prevalence among IDU in New York City and nationally. We've seen HIV prevalence and incidence decrease over time from the 90s to this decade. In New York City specifically, HIV prevalence among IDU has decreased from 54% in 1990 to about 13% in 2001, according to some recent research. A real responsibility of a lot of this decrease is certainly the widespread availability of sterile syringes in New York City. Sterile syringes are available in the city through exchange programs. We have 11 different programs operating in 16 neighborhoods with high HIV prevalence in IDU. In 2001, we started an expanded syringe access program in which non-prescription sales of syringes in pharmacies became available. Medical providers can also sell syringes through that mechanism. So we have a lot of access to syringes in New York City. And yet, a lot of IDU continue to share syringes, and we're concerned about why this is going on. Just theoretically, I think we can think about it in perhaps three different factor groups about why IDU continue to share syringes. Number one, I think in a broadly diverse city like New York City, there are a lot of different community and cultural centers and norms that are going on, and they're changing over time. Some of the norms may relate to recent immigrants coming into the city. Some of the other norms relate to specific networks of IDU within certain neighborhoods and certain communities that influence syringe sharing. There are some psychological factors that may influence syringe sharing. We have, in particular, frequent injectors of perhaps many drugs that would lower the threshold for consistent single-use syringes. I think there's been an increase among syringe sharers of couples, say syringe sharing couples, where it's a monogamous kind of partnership. They know each other's HIV and Hep C status, perhaps, and they've made the conscious decision to share syringes only with that one person. And lastly, and this is going to be most of the focus of this talk, is sort of programmatic factors that may influence IDU to share syringes. And these are really about how we design and allocate and market syringe access programs, not just needle exchanges, but also pharmacy sales and access through medical providers and other sources. So the objectives of this analysis here are really to examine what the correlates of receptive syringe sharing are. And receptive syringe sharing means where an IDU uses a syringe after another IDU has already used it. So examine the correlates of receptive syringe sharing and really dive into the last factor, those programmatic influences on syringe sharing to allow for better targeting and marketing of syringe access programs. I will say from a health department perspective, this is perhaps one of the most meaningful contributions we can make is in to kind of understand how we're spending our money, where it's going to in specific neighborhoods, and to allow for increasing access to meet the needs of the IDU population. So, like I said, this analysis was in the context of the National HIV Behavioral Surveillance System. The NHBS is, like I said, a national multi-site survey that's been designed by the CDC. It's located in 25 cities around the country. It has a cross-sectional study design. The main risk groups that NHBS is surveying are MSM, injection drug users, and high-risk heterosexuals. I'm just going to talk about the one cycle that of injection drug users that we collected data for in 2005. The whole process was anonymous in terms of the recruitment, interviewing, and HIV testing. We recruited people through a method called respondent-driven sampling. I'll talk a little bit about that. And overall, we had a total eligible sample size of 500. So respondent-driven sampling is a method of peer referral or snowball sampling that uses mathematical modeling to reduce some of the biases associated with peer recruitment sampling. Two of the main biases are the tendency of participants to recruit people that are like each other. It's called homophily. And another bias that it reduces is the tendency of people with large network sizes to be overrepresented in the sample. Logistically, participants take the survey and then recruit other people within their social networks of injection drug users to take the survey. Coupons are distributed to track the relationship of recruiter to recruitee. And at the end, when we're doing data analysis, we take into account these recruitment patterns and network size that are tracked to weight the data. Our study population for this are active injection drug users. Active means injected in the past 12 months, and that's been verified by our interviewers in that they have visible signs of injection or detailed knowledge of injection practices. They have to be a resident of the New York City metropolitan area, an adult, again recruited through this social network process, and lastly is in English and Spanish. Here are some findings from our study. Our IDU population is largely male and Hispanic. The median age is 42. A lot of these findings are reflected in other literature that's been conducted in New York City. A large proportion of our IDU are born in Puerto Rico, actually, and are newly immigrants to New York City. And not surprisingly, it's a largely poor and undereducated group. So here's our HIV prevalence overall for the city and by our borough. There's a lot of different dynamics going on in terms of the IDU groups within each one of those different boroughs. Overall, we have a self-reported HIV prevalence of 22%. In New York City overall, it's slightly lower in the Queens borough and slightly higher in the Bronx. That's self-reported HIV prevalence. I should say we did conduct HIV testing on a limited number, but not enough to validly report it out. So here's our main dependent variable that I'm looking at in this analysis. 19% of our IDU receptively shared syringes. Again, that means using a syringe after someone else has used it. We also looked at distributive sharing just to show some other sharing-related risks. Distributive sharing is when an IDU gives a syringe to another person after he or she has used it. And also some paraphernalia sharing, such as sharing cookers, cottons, and waters. All of these are HIV risks and hepatitis C risks, but again, we're going to be focusing on receptor syringe sharing here. Here's our main independent variable about where IDU got syringes in the past 12 months. In New York City, we're kind of categorizing these into two groups. One is sterile sources and the other is potentially unsterile sources. In sterile sources, we have syringe exchange, pharmacies, hospital and clinics, or those medical providers. And in potentially unsterile sources, we have friends, partners, relatives, and then another category of street sources, which might be drug dealers and off the street and through other kind of street sources. So, we categorize these as potentially unsterile sources, but in many cases, they might not be, particularly in the friend, partner, relative category. There's a lot of secondary needle distribution that's going on, and we fully expect that a lot of the needles are actually sterile, but we don't know, and they don't know, and it's just a way that we've used to categorize the two. So overall, syringe exchange is the highest source of syringes over the past 12 months at 65%, followed by pharmacies and then hospitals, clinics. And then 52% of IDU got syringes from a friend, partner, or relative, and 25% from the street source. the associations that we found between receptive syringe sharing and some of the other factors in those three factor groups that I told you about, first demographics, we didn't find any increase or decrease in risk among race, ethnicity, or gender, but we found that IDU who are homeless in the past year and IDU who are arrested in the past year faced an increased risk of sharing syringes. This graph shows the association of syringe sharing and reported HIV status. We see that there's some serosorting, or I guess you'd call it informed altruism, that's going on where people reduce their risk after they learn that they're HIV positive. There were HIV positive IDU were less likely to receptively and distributively share syringes after they were HIV diagnosed. Here with geography, there wasn't a significant association between syringe sharing and the borough of residence or the neighborhood of residence, but there was based on their birthplace, where IDU born in Puerto Rico and those born outside the territorial and continental U.S. were much more likely to share syringes. Here are some other factors that are associated with syringe sharing. IDU who injected speedballs, cocaine, and other drugs, including prescription opiates, were more likely to share syringes. Some other drug-related factors. IDU who had attended a shooting gallery or a place that they went specifically to inject were at increased likelihood for sharing. IDU who injected more drugs as polydrug users who inject more frequently had an increased risk. And lastly, our main focus is we found that when we put the syringe categories into those two categories, the sterile sources and the unsterile sources, those IDU who got syringes only from unsterile sources in the past year were over four times as likely to report syringe sharing in the past year, so that there is a considerable increase in likelihood among those who only access syringes from an unsterile source. And also there is an interesting kind of linear relationship between the number of sources that a person reported in the past year and the likelihood that they're going to share those syringes. So people who IDU who obtained syringes from five sources were almost eight times as likely to share those syringes as IDU who only obtained them from one source. A lot of that, it relates to the consistency of syringe source, and I'll talk a little bit about that more. So we constructed a multiple logistic regression model where we put all of these bivariate analyses into one large model and came out with the following findings as the significant predictors of receptive syringe sharing. Some of these I didn't talk about because I didn't have time, but again, the number of drugs injected, so the polydrug users are at increased risk. Those who reported unprotected sex in the past year are increased risk. Arrests in the past year. Interestingly, age was also associated, where we split our sample in two by the median age. So the younger 50% of injectors were over three times as likely to share as the older injectors. And lastly, again, that main variable that we were looking at, if the IDU got all their syringes from unsterile sources in the past year, they were almost at six-fold risk or likelihood for sharing those syringes. We're, again, interested in that last variable. So we broke out that aggregate of all syringes from sterile or unsterile sources into the individual five sources that of syringes that IDU could report. And we found that IDU who obtained syringes from an exchange program compared to those who did not were about half as likely to share syringes. We didn't find an association one way or the other for IDU who obtained syringes from a medical provider or pharmacy, but there was a significant increase in risk among IDU who obtained syringes from the street source and from friends. So just quickly, some of the strengths and limitations of this. NHBS among IDU is really the first citywide survey of HIV and active injection drug users in New York City, and it uses some sampling methods outside the traditional venue-based or institutional sampling, and that might yield a more representative population estimates. But some of the limitations of what we have here is that even after we've conducted the adjustment, RDS depends a lot on a lot of theoretical assumptions in the recruitment and data collection processes that might not be viable. And lastly, I'm just going to talk quickly about some discussion recommendations. Again, we did find this association between syringe exchange program use and sharing. And again, we should interpret this, you know, in a number of different ways because it's a cross-sectional study. The first way might be that that syringe exchange program use might contribute to risk reduction other than some more or less than other syringe sources, sterile and unsterile sources. Or conversely, less risky IDU may decide, because they are less risky, to go obtain syringes from an exchange program. I think a recommendation on these findings would be that we need to do a better job at targeting exchange programs in areas among populations and other groups with low use that we've found to encourage greater utilization of exchange programs among all IDU, even those who perhaps engage in a serious sort of monogamous sharing. You know, there are independent effects of using or independent benefits of using exchange programs related to getting into other healthcare access and other care that are really important that exchange programs and other sterile sources can provide. The other main finding was that, again, obtaining syringes from friends and street sources and, interestingly, inconsistently obtaining them from many sources is associated with increased risk in sharing. And I think this goes to the point of better marketing of syringe exchange programs over time to encourage ongoing use of the programs. And just lastly, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues in the Health Department at NDRI who conducted the fieldwork and ethnography